Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 415 of the Roguecast, recorded May 9th, 2023. Gung-Ho 2025. All right, it is a new week. We have, we're past Free Comic Book Day for the year.
It went really well.
It went really well. As always, great time. Lots of people came out.
We should say thanks to everyone who came out. You know, we always talk about how, like, it's a very positive and high-energy day. Mm-hmm. Everybody out there is having fun. Everybody's excited about comics. And we just get, like, kind of get to talk about comics all day. Give comics to kids. Yep. You know, like... It's really fun, and see people get excited about comics. So.
Yeah, people come out with some cool costumes. There's a guy in sort of black Superman costume. It's pretty cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
And his daughter was Wonder Woman.
Yes.
And when I took their picture for the store thing, she suddenly got, like, shy and embarrassed and clammed up, but otherwise she seemed to be having the time of her life.
Yeah. And, you know, we had the line until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We gave away tons of free comics. It was a good day.
Yes.
And now we can turn our attention to Free RPG Day, which is next up.
Right. Not as big a day,
not
to be honest.
A day.
Like, it's literally. I think we've mentioned this before, but I'll mention again. When we order for Free Comic Book Day, and we do pay for the free comics, but we pay, like, a little less because they're not always printed on the highest quality paper and stuff like that. But we buy it all, and we do for Free RPG Day too. But we do not get to choose the numbers.
They just send kits.
They send us kits, and it has like 10 of this, 5 of this, 10 of that.
It's still a pretty popular day. We have lines.
It is. It's just that, like, you know, unless we want a bunch of stuff that's kind of potentially the Mort side of things, we can't exactly order it in giant numbers.
No.
So it's always going to be a sort of a smaller deal, unless they change up how they do it. But it's also like, whereas Free Comic Book Day, I believe, like, there's a lot of people working on it, Randy, right?
Yep.
But this is kind of something of a one-man show for Free RPG Day.
Yeah, it's a small company owns it.
Yeah. Now, all that said, it's a cool day. They put out good product.
There's a lot of good stuff this year.
And, I'm always excited. You know, is Paizo doing something this year?
Paizo always does stuff, yep.
I was just like a
Pathfinder.
I wasn't sure if they had, like, weirdly gotten, like, too big for it or anything. But yeah, they always put out fun stuff. In past years, they did the thing in, like, they did a Starfinder adventure where you essentially played it's the aliens that are kind of like
they're called Skittermanders, and they're kind of like their Stitches, yes.
Yeah, like from Lilo and Stitch. And they've also done ones where you, like, play goblins too.
Yep.
One of their things. They have some fun with it.
The last couple of years, they've done the Leshy, which are their plant people.
Oh yeah.
So that is this year's as well. Maybe a follow up to last year's.
Is D&D doing something?
They don't.
Weirdly, we're too big for it.
Yeah.
I think we had some stuff from before, but it was kind of like actually from like another day.
Yes, yeah, so it was something they did. They
we had some
they
overstock.
In this. Yeah.
But actually, yeah, it's like you know, you'll see. Usually there's the guys who make, like, the Warhammer RPG will have something, or maybe, not literally this year, I mean, I don't know what they have this year, but sometimes people, like, there's, like, a Legend of the Five Rings, or the Hobbit
sure they
RPG,
the G.I. Joe system.
Yeah, they did a little sampler of that, or the Power Rangers, so, and usually they'll have, like, oh, we'll get, like, a couple of dice, little assemblable dice towers that we'll hand out, or some miniatures, or some cool dice. And we'll hand those out. We'll, like, give, you know, like, sort of two things per person usually is common for us.
So, yeah, I was looking to see what all there is. So WizKids is doing a Onslaught, their D&D miniatures game.
Okay.
Modifus is doing Octon Cthulhu, actually.
Okay.
Okay.
Which, is that World War II Cthulhu?
That is, it is.
Era stuff.
Magpie has a Root game and an Avatar Last Airbender.
Oh, that's cool.
That's Root, like, based on the board game with the little woodland animals.
Yep. Renegade has Cobra Con Fusion, which is a crossover between Transformers and G.I. Joe, as well as Taste of the Moon, which is the Vampire the Masquerade. Ninth Level Games has a Mazes, which is their sort of, like, D&D-themed one.
Uh-huh.
Free League is doing Dragonbane, which is their new sort of old-school... these are the guys who do Alien, Morkborg, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Dragonbane is a D20-based or fantasy RPG.
And Morkborg is known to be part of that... what do they call those ones that's the kind of retro games? What do you call those?
I don't know what you call those.
There's something like OSR. Like, yeah. I forget if that is that old school Renaissance or something like that, or maybe it stands for something else, but that too.
I don't know.
But yeah, it is. It's part of a broad movement for some for retro style gaming meant to evoke first edition of D&D or other games of that era.
Yeah, and that's only some of them. Unfortunately, like Dave was saying, we get a small number of these. We get a couple kits, so it's like a dozen of them, maybe. So it is more of a limited thing.
Yep,
it's good to come in early on Free RPG Day, or you may be left with not the full selection.
Yeah, this year on Free Comic Book Day, I was able to tell people, hey, we're going to have plenty of stuff. You could really arrive anytime during the day. We're not going to be sold out of any of the big stuff. Free RPG Day is a earlier the better.
And then we are doing our first board game day on July 15th, which yep. we'll have more details on soon. I need to sit down with John and figure out what we want to demo and all that thing. Yep. One of the games we'll definitely play that day is one of the games we got this week called Tapple.
Yes.
This is a like TikTok sensation, I guess. It is a party game that's really popular. It is a little wheel that has letters from A through W.
Right.
And you click the button down, right?
Right, it's like an interactive little tool thing, yep. yeah.
And there's a center button you hit that starts a timer, 15 seconds. And you flip down this card, and the card is like, what was the thing that we just
The topic
did?
Was villains.
Name the musician band.
Musicians was one. Another one was, what was ours, Dave? What was the other one?
Villains.
Villains.
So for instance, on the villains one, there's whoever starts, and you've got like essentially 15 seconds to pick, you know, find one of those letters
that has not been pushed.
That has not been pushed, and of course, none of them have when you start. So let's just say you're like, you click down L for villains, Loki.
Yeah.
And then it's like the next person, it's, you know, the timer starts for them immediately. So this, again, party game, real high energy.
Very fast.
And you know, like, I know I was like, Hitler, right? Like, so we're combining fictional and real villains, and it's goofy and fun, and we're laughing at it, and it was pretty fun. We went around a few times, so yep. you and me and John were doing
this
one.
It's harder than you think, because you get to a point where you're like, you can't think of anything. 15 seconds is not a long time.
Yeah, I was going to say the timer.
I think it might only be 10 seconds.
Is it only 10?
It's pretty okay. quick.
The timer aspect but, is kind of like nerve-wracking yep. a little bit.
And John was, John like named one, and he was in the act of about to press
the button
when the thing went yeah. on yeah. him or whatever. Yep. But yeah, it was super fun. And, like, so easy to just jump into. I think we're going to have a copy around so we can just show people at any given time.
Yeah, we can demo it at any time. It's a very fun game. I would highly recommend it to people. And it's cheap. It's like $20.
Yeah, yeah. Given that you get the kind of cool little spinny wheel thing with it and everything, it's a good price.
That was one of the things I picked. I saw at Gamma, and we got it as a result. We also got a game called Shivers, which is a pop-up game. It's a little haunted house-looking thing.
Hmm.
You open up like a pop-up book, and in the back, there's like windows and stuff, and you put a sheet in there that's got different clues. So essentially, it's kind of like Unlock or one of the other escape room games. You're trying to figure out the clue, figure out the puzzle and that kind of thing. And there's like 9 different puzzles you can do with it.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds cool.
It's really pretty. It's got really nice productions, and we just got that in. You can come take a look at that. We got Lost Home of Monsters. We previously had the blind bags of those with the little miniature pins.
Yeah.
It's a pin that you flip the little thing at the bottom, and it becomes a miniature.
Yeah.
Lost Home of Monsters, the blind bags came with monster pins and an encounter card and a D20 and all this kind of stuff. The new ones are for characters. Like, yep. if you want a mini that you can just kind of carry around on a pin, there are 24 different combinations.
Yep.
They didn't go quite. There's not a lot of human fighter stuff. It's like there's an orc barbarian, there's a goblin bard or something like that.
Yeah, there's definitely kind of the otter race and class combinations.
And they're just cool little pins that you can then turn into a miniature.
Mm-hmm.
And those aren't blind bags. You buy whichever one you want.
Yep.
We got another Kickstarter. We got was the Roll and Play Sci-Fi Character and DM Kit. We've had these before. We had the Roll and Play, some of the fantasy ones. My kid loves these. They basically are a spiral-bound booklet of ideas. Little tables for, like, backstory for your character, your character's favorite, your favorite food, and his weapon of choice, and all this kind of stuff. And DM kit has, like, worlds and that kind of stuff on it.
Sort of related to that, sounds like a much more expanded version of... There are a lot of tables and charts in the Morkborg, the Borg series of games. And I got the pirate one fairly recently. And I had a lot of fun creating the character because it's like... it would have small tables that were more unusual. It's like, you know, what's a weird skill you have? What's a strange item that you picked up in your travels? Right. And whatever they are, they're all kind of flavorful and weird. It's like, oh, this is a weird old harmonica that was found on a skeleton and has, you know, arcane markings, so it's magical or something. But anyway, those kind of things, springboards can be super fun. And these sort of random things, because you're like, oh, well, everybody has fun making up characters, but sometimes the randomness is actually pretty exciting.
And there's a lot of tables in this thing.
Yeah, that's very cool. What are they called again?
They're called Roll and Play. Sci-fi character and sci-fi DM kits.
Cool, I need to look at those.
We got the deluxe upgrades for Dune Imperium, which Dave, you and I have both played.
Yep.
This is the deck builder with other mechanics to it.
Yeah, it's like deck building and worker placement.
The deluxe upgrade includes, like, miniatures instead of little... So when you're using your soldiers, instead of little cubes, you have minis representing them.
Yeah.
And also the box is a bigger box, and you can actually put the main game and all the expansions into it.
That's pretty cool. So I mean, this is a good game anyway.
Yeah.
The little cubes representing soldiers works perfectly fine.
Oh, sure.
But if you could upgrade them, well, why not?
I'm pretty sure John bought it.
John bought it. There's also a $10 upgrade that comes with the dreadnoughts that are in the Rise of Ix expansion, which is another little bit of miniatures thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you wanted to upgrade your Dune game, that is a limited run thing. We just got it directly from Direwolf Digital, and once they're gone, they are gone.
Like the spice, they're elusive.
Like the spice. Like the worms, you should not try to ride them.
By the way, I do think that if Dune 2 is popular enough, I think there should be a theme park, and I think you should get to ride the worm.
Ride the worm.
You climb on, like, a little sort of saddle thing, and, like, it's just sand blasted into your face. And you're like, pretend you're in the desert. It's super hot. Dave, sand is hitting you in the eye.
We're in Texas. Sand, hot? We could do this. We could just make this Dune.
Just in the parking lot?
Yeah.
Out back?
In the parking lot out back. Rogue's Gallery presents the Dune Worm Ride.
Ride the Sand Worm.
Ride the Sand Worm.
Welcome to Rogue's Gallery. Are you ready to ride the Sand Worm?
Rogue's Gallery. Comics, games, and sand worms.
I was going to say build it in, like, Las Vegas, but, you know.
By the way, this will thematically come back around because we're going to talk about the Dune 2 trailer in a little bit.
And because we can't stop talking about sandworms.
We can't.
Everyone loves sandworms.
You know, it has always been a strange and suggestive image, even in the book. The book is filled with psychedelic and psychosexual imagery. It's an odd book.
Do you think Frank Herbert did some drugs?
Mushrooms, yes.
Yeah, okay, it was mushrooms?
100%.
Yeah. All right, good to know.
I'm going to guess mushrooms and acid, but I think primarily mushrooms.
We also got from USAopoly a few new things. We got the Munchkin South Park. If you like those flavored Munchkins, there's a new Munchkin. We also got a restock on Critical Role and Marvel Munchkin.
Yep.
We got a new expansion for Disney's miniatures combat game, Sorcerer Arena.
Mm-hmm.
The new one is called Leading the Charge, and it has Elsa, Scar, and Buzz Lightyear in there.
It's a good batch.
We got we're trying out. They do a bunch of Yahtzees, and we got the D&D Yahtzee, which comes with the cup you use to roll the dice is actually like a dice tower thing.
Yeah.
Which looks pretty cool.
We also got like the Spider-Man dice.
Yep.
And there was a
D20, Spider-Man oversized D20, and a Kool-Aid Man oversized D20, which comes with a little Kool-Aid dice pouch, by the way.
Yep. When you roll that and you hit a 20, you know what you have to say.
Oh, yeah! it'd be great if it said it automatically. we got some mini metal dice from Norse Foundry. They are really, really tiny little things. They're called Pixie Dice.
Yeah.
And it's like $15 for a little metal set of mini dice.
So. You know, pixies or fairies or whatever have recently become a common playable race for D&D. These would be good dice for you, your character, or any little character you might have. Yep. I'm going to say halflings also included, Dwergar, whatever little ones you're playing.
And then we also got a board game from Lucky Duck called Numelia, which is a tile building, like, animal collection game. These are the guys that did Flamecraft, some of those. They do good games, so worth checking out. All right. Let's talk about comics for the week for May 10th.
Yep.
Dawn of DC continues. We got two DC books this week. First, let's talk about Green Lantern.
Yes. So this is a sort of return to form for Hal, but in a kind of unique way. He is over in Iron Man and Invincible Iron Man, he's been having a rough time lately. Yep. It was a kind of, like, bad times. Go ahead and say whatever you were about to say, Randy.
So what I was going to say is the premise of this is, I guess, in the Lazarus planet, crossover.
The recent DC big crossover.
The Guardians vanished, and the United Planets has taken control of the Green Lantern Corps and has basically decided that Earth is unsafe, and they're not sending Green Lantern protection to it.
They're basically quarantined.
Yeah, right. And so how was like,
first of all, good move on the part of United Planets. Sure. They made the right call. It's a chaotic and dangerous planet. I would cut it off, too.
So Hal comes back down to Earth, and he doesn't have a ring, but very quickly gets one in this, in a way that I think I didn't understand until, like, the third read-through, that how he had gotten his ring.
But yeah, it's kind of cool. Like, when I realize what's happening, it's a cool sequence.
Yeah.
I think they could have just been a little bit more clear about how it happened. But it is a cool idea. But you're going to see classics like, who's his girl?
Carol Ferris. Who now wants nothing to do with him.
Some complications. Yep, some complications in there.
But he's back to Coast City. Coast City seems to be happy to have the Green Lantern back. They're going to go a little earthbound, but clearly the villains are still maybe going to be cosmic.
Right, and we think that they're kind of vibing off of a Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, for sure.
Because that has always been Hal, anyway. Yeah. So if you like Top Gun Maverick and you kind of want to see a little bit of the old hotshot Green Lantern, but also, this is...
It's also going to focus on Jon Stewart a little bit.
Yeah, there's a backup story with Jon Stewart and Guy Gardner.
Well, there's a Jon Stewart part, and then there's a jump to the future, which is the Guy Gardner.
I believe that is all the same writer.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, so...
But, yeah. Definitely not just focused on Hal. Right. So.
Yeah, they are going to get the other Green Lanterns in there as well. I thought this was a really good first issue. I know y'all were not quite as on board with it as I was, but I've been liking the Dawn of DC stuff, and I thought if you've been wanting to jump back into Green Lantern, it's been a while, this is probably a good place to jump back
in. I think
in.
Personally why I wasn't into it is that I think I'm a little tired of Hal.
Hal is a jerk.
And he's not my favorite Green Lantern. So
he's not a monster. He's not like a. No, he's no, not a no. I don't know if I'd say he's a jerk. He's cocky. He's a little jerky.
He does wreck a multi-million-dollar airplane and seems not for adult.
That's the kind of thing that a hotshot does, Randy. Yeah. It's just hotshot stuff. But we should also mention for wall supplies last only, you get a Green Lantern ring when you buy it.
Right. Yep. If you buy a first issue, you get a Green Lantern ring.
We have done this promotion a few times over the years. The DC does it every once in a while. These rings are always really pretty limited. And in fact, we didn't get all of the order that we had hoped to get.
Yep.
So it's going to be, I think, 50.
Yep.
Basically, the first 50 people to buy one, they go and get one. It's also on sale as of
right now,
the day before you could conceivably be hearing this. So hurry up.
Also, the rings are not charged, and we do not sell the batteries.
Right. But you can just go to OA.
Yeah, if you just go to OA, you can charge it, though.
You probably even just go to MOGO.
Yeah. If you go to MOGO or OA, you know. But we should say, ours do not come with power batteries.
Or just go to a bar called Warriors. I'm sure they'll help.
What is the... one of the coolest things that Hal did in the John's run way back when was when he was, manhunters are powered by, like, Green Lantern power sources. When he, like, punched through its, like, chest and he, like, charged his ring with its, like, manhunter heart.
Yep.
That was dope.
That was cool. The other book is Spirit World, which is, DC is doing some new stuff in Dawn of DC, which I like.
Yeah, and this is specifically keying off, it's like Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
Yep.
And so they've got a trio of books, I think, coming out that are going to honor that and have some new heroes. And this one is off to a great start. I really like
this. This is my pick for the week.
It's really good. So this is during Lazarus Planet Dark Fate. They were fighting hopping vampires, which is a thing,
right? It's from Chinese folklore. Anybody who's like watched some supernatural movies from Chinese cinema, you're going to have seen these guys.
And Cassandra Cain was dragged back to the afterlife with them.
Yep. And so it is that sort of Chinese folklore afterlife where, to me, it looked very much like in the movie Spirited Away, or at least vibing very much like that.
And now Zhang Zhu, a spirit envoy, and her reluctant ally, John Constantine.
They're reluctant ally because this is a non-binary character. Right.
Yep.
By the way, really cool design. I think their costume looks really cool on the cover, and I like their attitude. And it is kind of... what's their age?
I would guess early 20s.
I think that's about right. Seems to be somebody who can keep up with Constantine a bit.
Yeah.
Throw the attitude back at him.
Because they know the spirit world in a different way than Constantine does.
Right. But they're kind of at odds. Like they're Constantine does not exactly love them.
But they're trying to get Cassandra Cain back, and we also see Cassandra Cain in the other world.
I thought that was fun too.
It's all really fun.
It's because in the other world. All the little extra bits and pieces in this were things I really liked. So I'm always looking to see Cassandra Cain do more cool stuff.
Yep.
I always liked her in Batman. And so, yeah, seeing her in the afterlife where it's like, oh, yeah, the ghosts, the spirits around here, like, if a living person somehow gets in, they're like a delicious snack for these guys. And so there's, like, lots of ghosts and creatures pursuing her, and she runs into some people who are sort of going to help her out, and you find out some neat lore.
The art is really good. It's got good world building. It's got good characters.
Character's name is Xanthe, I think. I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's like X-A-N-T-H-E.
Yep.
It's probably something like that. The kind of neat thing that they can do is... It's like sort of per Japanese folklore, fold like sort of little origami shapes kind of very quickly and burn them. And instead, you know, traditionally that sends good wishes and things into the spirit world or the afterlife. But here they form like tangible items.
Yeah.
Like they help a little kid early on and create like an umbrella out of one of those. But
she can also do weapons and stuff.
They can also do weapons and have a big sword too.
Yeah.
A big old Final Fantasy sword. To me it was a really good first issue. Is it a miniseries, right?
I don't know.
I was under the impression it was three like six issue miniseries, but I'm not. It's an ongoing. I don't know.
I don't know. I thought it was an ongoing. But
I thought it was an ongoing as well.
I guess we'll find out.
Yep.
Sometimes they're not super clear.
Marvel has a new Silk, an ongoing or probably miniseries.
Yep.
This is Cindy Moon, who has Spider-Man's powers, got similar origins. This seems to be they're doing the multiverse thing a little bit. She is like a private eye.
Seemingly like 1920s or 30s San Francisco or something.
Yeah.
But there is a big reveal about it.
Yes, there is.
And but by the way, I thought that art and stuff was like really cool. Nice. Like it is like it's almost like Silk doing Spider-Man noir stuff.
Yeah.
It
was fun. It's a fun first issue.
Yeah.
There's definitely more to the story.
Right. There's more to the story than that.
We got Batman White Knight presents Generation Joker, the latest in Sean Murphy's miniseries.
Yeah, his, like, alternate world where, at its core, it was a Joker ends up the good guy. Batman falls into insanity and becomes the bad guy in this world.
Yep.
This, I know, is about the twins, the maybe now grown-up or at least teenagers of Harley Quinn and the Joker, who, again, Joker in this world, decent guy, not a piece of shit. I know that they steal the Batmobile in it, and I don't know, shenanigans ensue, or maybe they're trying to do something good with it. I don't actually know what their deal is.
So they have brought, he's got new scriptors on board, but also the artist is Mark Andolfo.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. If you've been digging that, there's another iteration of the White Knight stuff. Last one was Batman Beyond. They're clearly just extending the story in, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new Cullen Bunn book with art by Leo Max, which is really pretty, called Ghost Lore. That is a new riff on sort of ghost stories.
Their tagline was something like, what are the ghost stories that ghosts themselves tell?
Because the first issue, I don't get that impression at all.
I kind of didn't either.
It's like a car crash, and there's a girl, and she maybe sees the dead in a way that her father doesn't.
Yeah, but it's got some good writing in there. Cullen Bunn is... He definitely is, like, something of an idea machine, but I also think his, like, individual scripted scenes and stuff are pretty good.
Yeah.
The girl's dad is, like, a priest? Minister? What was
it? Priest. He's a priest, yeah.
Priest.
Yeah.
And I know that, like, he's... Like, you see the sermon he's giving early on, and there's kind of an interesting thing where... She calls him out later, and he's like, oh, yeah, that anecdote you said, like, grandma always
never happened, yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And she's like, that isn't really a thing that she said.
Well, it seems like this small town that they live in has, like, seen something bad, and sort of faith has been broken. And that's why, like, the congregation is dwindling, and there just seems to be the kind of, like, unsettledness to this place.
You know what it vibed a little like, and I'm probably thinking about it just because of the sort of church aspects, is like the TV show Midnight Mass or the miniseries. So if you like that kind of horror, I would say character-centric, eerie, but not like, this isn't big jump scare stuff. This is creepy and eerie, but also like deep characters.
Yeah.
I would check it out. Or if you liked other Cullen Bunn stuff. And he's only written about 1,000 things.
Right. No, there's a Dynamite has a new book, King Kong: The Great War. This is the Skull Island version of King Kong.
Yep.
And it takes place in 1917 when some German troops have washed up on Skull Island.
Yep.
And they meet monsters. I thought the art on this was really good.
I agree.
And I like the idea of this, like, basically, the, it's very similar to Skull Island, which, although that was, like, Vietnam soldiers, although, and there were people going with Monarch, like, they were trying to go there.
Yeah.
This is more like the military guys wind up in a place full of monsters.
Yep.
And we don't even see Kong for most of the issue, but we do see the island and all that kind of stuff.
It was, you know, one of the cooler things about the movie was there were lots of monsters there. You're like, oh, these things are dangerous even to Kong, but he is the apex predator there. He probably hunts and eats these things. And you kind of see a little bit of how that a monster island ecosystem would work, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. There's an image book called Something Epic by artist Simon Kudransky. I guess the pitch on this one is basically like the notion that some people are born with the power to like make their imagination real.
Well, it's riffing off of like the basic idea of like people who are like creative types. I guess whether you're like a writer or an artist or whatever, but then like you might tap into some. It's kind of like
extraplanar existence.
Yeah,
where,
I mean, you know, sometimes like Alan Moore and Grant Morrison have talked about like idea space and stuff like that, and it seems like it's sort of riffing on that. But definitely, it is a real physical place that you might go to or draw for energy from.
But it looks like there's like things afoot. Main character is a little kid. We'll see where it
and
goes.
It's got very nice sort of painty looking art.
Yeah.
There was a few graphic novels that got reprinted this week in DC. They were this is what counts as rushing in publishing
it's
terms.
True.
They wanted to get some stuff out for James Gunn's DC slate.
Yep.
So Batman and Robin, the Grant Morrison Volume 1 has been reprinted.
Yep.
Batman and Son, his Batman run, which is the first appearance of Damian.
It's literally like if you want to see Damian's first appearance, that's it,
yeah,
right?
And it was Andy Kubert done artwork.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
Wonder Woman.
Did that have the Ninja Man bats?
It did, yes. Wonder Woman, Paradise Lost, Paradise Found, which ties into the Wonder Woman sort of Themyscira art thing they're going to do. And then Creature Commando's got a reprint.
I will say, this is the DC on the ball. This is actually way ahead of the game.
It would have been nice to have it when the news broke, but there was no way for them to know that.
Yeah.
Which Creature Commandos? Because like they've been around since the 60s.
So it is J.M. DeMatteis writing.
Okay, so this is probably
the art looked a little old school, so maybe like a 70s thing?
Interesting. Yeah, that could be.
Other stuff that was on my list, really still liking Mark Miller's Ambassadors, which is... Every issue is a different super-powered person. This one has Olivia Coppia art. Scott Snyder and Francis Manapul's Clear concludes. I thought it was a good, solid ending. Scar number 2, which I think we all liked.
Yeah,
so this is Scar from The Lion King. They continue to sort of develop the mythology or the lore of the African savanna, I guess.
Yeah.
And there's like a few really darkly funny scenes in this.
Yep.
But also
what made you laugh out loud, which is
laugh out loud
a rarity.
But also, but I think that you know the serious stuff is well handled, and you're kind of it's weird. Well, everybody knows Lion King is based on Hamlet, but this were like really like kind of like vibes into that, where there's like some sort of Game of Thronesian machinations going on. There's people who are trying to help Scar to power, mm-hmm. but it's obvious that they're doing it for their own benefit, and you're kind of seeing alliances made and tentative alliances here and there. And yet at the same time, it doesn't feel like, even though it's diving a little more, say, than the movie did into sort of the interactions like that, it doesn't feel like it's it couldn't fit.
Yeah.
That's not really Lion King-ish.
It's expanding the story in a way that doesn't make you groan.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the Disney sequels feel just like cash grabs.
Yeah.
The story seems to line up.
This is good. I actually like, if they were doing this instead of like the live action remakes, I'd be more interested in it.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
As we've also all noted, there is some serious Circle of Life stuff going on. You straight up see some zebras that get like the opening scene get killed by like a pride of lions.
Yep.
Not that you see them like chewing them to pieces and stuff, but you see them about to eat them.
Zebras
talking about things,
and then they're like,
"It's a little disconcerting."
They're just dead. Okay.
Yeah, I was not ready for that.
There's a Marvel book I forgot to mention. Was Extreme Venomverse number 1?
Yep.
which is a it's there's three stories in it. This is basically they're doing the multiverse thing they've done with Spider-Gwen and Spider-Man, where there's multiple Venoms. There's a Samurai Venom.
I was gonna say, I see there's a Samurai Venom on the cover.
Then image-wise, there was Phantom Road number 3, which I'm really digging.
Yeah, that's Jeff Lemire's book about the trucker and the lady he picked up and their kind of otherworldly crossover stuff. But this issue specifically focuses on some people that are still back in our real world and has some interesting twists, that especially the end of it went wild.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of Jeff Lemire, there is the second OGN of the Bone Orchard Mythos.
Yes.
Mythos.
Yeah.
His standalone graphic novels in like, kind of a shared horror setting.
Well, it's not just that. It's also he does the OGNs and then he does like the 6-issue
this
series.
This was a mini series that they're collecting, yeah.
Yeah.
New issue of Saga, and I think what we think might be the penultimate issue of Zdarsky's Daredevil run.
Yep.
I think that's everything. Did we cover all the comic stuff?
I think so.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about news. All right, we have a fair amount of news to get to, some trailers to cover. Let's start with some casting stuff.
Yep.
So Noah Hawley is working on an Alien movie.
Right, real quick recap. Noah Hawley is.
He did Legion. The Legion and Fargo.
Yep.
He is one of the better people doing TV.
Yep.
I don't know if he's done any movies.
He did one. I know he did one movie.
Okay.
I think it was a sci-fi space.
Interesting.
Kind of.
He was going to do one of the a new Star Trek movie, which I think would not be South necessarily Korea. One of the Chris Pine ones, but
right.
But just have all of that budget and that would be the sort of modern flavor. But various things led to it falling, that deal falling through. So
yeah,
that didn't
Lucy
happen.
In the Sky.
Okay, which I've never seen.
But anyway,
everything he's done on TV has been great.
Yeah, and so what are we talking about today?
So we are talking about he is doing Alien.
Yep.
And they have cast the lead, which is Sydney Chandler, who... oh, it's an FX show. It's an Alien show. That makes more sense. Because Hawley's a TV guy.
Yeah.
FX Alien show, that's more interesting to me than a movie.
Right. I think we knew it was a show.
I'd forgotten. So Chandler was in Danny Boyle's Sex Pistols miniseries on FX recently.
Okay.
She was in Don't Worry, Darling. I don't know her from anywhere, but... But going to be the lead.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know her enough to like be yay or nay. But I am continue to think that I have fallen out of pretty much interest in all Aliens movies, all Predator movies. They're all very diminishing returns to me. But I think a TV show is a place where you could explore the lore. That it wouldn't just have to be a quick get in and get out. That it wouldn't have the pitfalls of Ridley Scott's weird.
Prometheus
stuff.
Yeah.
And you could build out that world in a show and maybe have, you know, a pretty good ensemble. There's so much freedom you can get on TV.
Yeah.
And you can get a budget that's going to look just like a movie.
Yep.
So
once the writer's strike is over.
Yep. which yeah, go writers.
Yep.
Suck at studios.
Yep.
Some of us would, you know, this, the practical effect for us that is as far as fans might be that we just have to wait a little longer for some things, and you know what? That's a price we should be willing to pay.
But yep. On the plus side, there's a lot of television that's backlogged that we can jump into.
Yeah, I'm not hurting. The thing is, for us, there's plenty of content for us, and unfortunately, the studios will keep making money, but they'll make less money as stuff comes out, and hopefully, they will. I'm more worried that, like, the writers and the people who work below the line, those are the ones who are going to relatively struggle during the during the strike. And I hope that the studios see the light, because I think if they think that people are going to turn on the writers and be like, "Where's our Stranger Things?" For the most part, I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think that is either.
And I saw George R. R. Martin. Or
anybody
someone else,
who would do that, yeah. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, the people who want that are like aren't going to get the Stranger Things they want.
No,
they're not going to get the Duffer Brothers Stranger Things ending. They're right.
Yeah, you're
going to
get a shit ending that's going to make you think that the last season of Game of Thrones was amazing.
And I've heard this is probably going to go on for a while.
Yeah, from my understanding, that seems to be the indication.
It's like September, October is what I'm...
Well, nobody knows.
Well, no, but that's like what I've heard from various...
Well, was it George R. R. Martin? One of the people who, high-profile people who commented recently was basically like, I've never seen the Guild this united.
Yeah.
Right. So, but it's going to mean that things are a little topsy-turvy, all the stuff we're talking about. It could be delayed quite a bit.
But it could mean also that we get a bunch of new comics from people who write TV and movies.
That's possible.
That happened last time. I think did Whedon come to comics during the writer's strike, or was that something else?
I know he did. Something he made else. Dr. Horrible on he his own Horrible at the that, time. Yeah. But
yeah, we may see some individual stuff, especially if the DGA and the Actors
that
Guild.
Alan Heinberg, did he come to?
I think Alan Heinberg might have been during the writer's strike.
I'm not sure. That kind of made sense.
But yeah, there's a. We may see some of these guys do some writing in the comic book world. We'll see.
Yep.
Carl Urban is in talks to play Johnny Cage in Mortal Kombat 2.
It's weird.
It's the first time I've had any interest in Mortal Kombat 2 because I really did not like that Mortal Kombat movie.
No, that Mortal Kombat was bad.
It was pretty terrible.
Just out of curiosity, how old is Carl Urban now?
Older than Johnny Cage should be.
So, but that leads me to think that they're probably going for a Johnny Cage who has, like, a slightly aged past his prime.
Yeah, I mean,
even in the original Mortal Kombat movie,
yes.
He was probably, like, 28 or something in that, and he was supposed to be past his prime.
He was, yeah. Yes.
So this is just literally, like, maybe taking, like, an older, definitely probably a better actor than anybody else who's portrayed Johnny yep. Cage before.
Yeah.
And, does that mean he's going to be the lead? Carl Urban's a pretty big get.
I don't know. I mean, Carl Urban's also totally willing to do ensemble pieces.
Yeah.
So,
but Johnny Cage seems like he'd be a fun character to have in the lead, like a yep. slightly hokey kind of guy.
Well, they'll have to continue the lead from the first one.
I don't want that. Let's just pretend it didn't happen.
I don't know, it was like the lineage of Scorpion or
whatever. Oh, that's right. It was some new character.
And as I recall, I believe that previous Mortal Kombat, now again, we're not talking about the 90s one, we're talking about the reboot from like a couple years ago,
yeah.
where they were like, the whole movie was them getting to the tournament
yeah.
and training for it, yeah. and then no they're tournament. Like, and then there was no tournament.
Yeah. Carl Urban will be the Christopher Lambert of this movie.
But maybe they'll do like a soft reboot and just rebuild it from the ground up.
Yeah, they need to, because that first one was a misfire.
You know what would be kind of fun? Is if they slightly, you know, following the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jesse Ventura type track, had it where Johnny Cage had, like, you know, served as a governor or a mayor or something at some point, and, but was still a kind of like well, a little kind of a goofy figure.
Yeah, I love this idea.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you got a slightly older Johnny Cage, it's something that's doable.
I enjoy Carl Urban, so I will probably watch it. But man, it better be good.
They've got a lot to make up for. I guess I'd say.
I love the original Mortal Kombat movie. It's still very watchable to me.
Yeah, still they finally now have some video game movies that are like. Pretty solid contenders for like the top spot. Like I would say Detective Pikachu. Probably some people I haven't seen Sonic, but I hear it's good. Like they're good at what they are for their characters. Obviously the TV show for Last of Us.
Super Mario Brothers
it made all the money that there is in the world, and they now have yep. it all in a big money bag. But original Mortal Kombat still incredibly watchable.
Agreed.
They have got a director for... They're doing a new Blair Witch project.
Yeah.
It's the original director and writer on board as producers.
Really?
And the director they've got is independent filmmaker Oliver Park, who has done...
Nothing.
Some short films.
A short film called Still, A Night of Horror, Nightmare Radio, and The Offering. I don't know this guy's stuff at all.
I suspect that the only people who have seen those movies, it sounds like films, like film circuit movies, or
yeah.
and like maybe student filmmakers.
Films.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I love the original Blair Witch Project. I like found footage movies, and it to me it's like the kind of godfather of them all.
Yeah, I've come to love Blair Witch. I think when I originally saw it, I did not care for it.
It's extremely divisive. Like, I'm sure a lot of people are listening right now are like, there's nothing scary in that movie. I'm so glad when those whiny people die.
I was also an idiot when I probably tried to watch it. It didn't quite kind of land for me.
Oh, interesting.
But going back to it as an adult, I could see sort of the kind
you definitely
of
intricacies
of
have
it.
To kind of throw yourself into it, enjoy the lore and the structure of it all. And honestly, something that Blair Witch did that would set the tone for pretty much every single found footage movie I've seen, literally, even the... they all use this sort of formula of opening with about 10-15 minutes that's a little bit lighter. There's some kind of, they ease you in with some kind of lighter, fun stuff.
Letting the characters breathe.
Letting the characters breathe, and then, yeah, getting more and more intense as it goes along, sprinkling in that lore that way. But anyway, they did a remake. I didn't like the remake very much. It was,
I'd forgotten that they did the remake.
It's easily forgettable.
Because I remember Book of Shadows, which was the second one, which I...
Weird movie, but I have some fondness for it.
Yeah.
That was also filmed like a regular movie. It was not found footage. The remake was not found footage.
Do you go back to found footage for...
Is that what this? Do we know yet?
No. This is very early on, but I thought it was interesting to kind of hypothesize a little bit.
I do think an indie director, like, if you're going to do it, that's not a bad way to go. I think one of the things that people... One of the frustrations they had with Blair Witch is that, you know, it is ultimately, like, almost emblematic of, like, classic horror movies in that there's very little that you actually see. And so maybe this is a time to see if you can show some creepy stuff, but still make it feel like found footage. You know that scene in, one of the scariest scenes in Signs was the party, footage of the kids where the alien walks by?
Yep.
Like, if you could, like, capture little glimpses of things like that and capture some of that vibe, I think you could find a new way to do a found footage version.
I agree.
That would be very different from the original. I wonder if it's going to take any continuity into...
Well, wasn't the kind of whole idea was that somebody found the tapes that they filmed in the original Blair Witch?
Right. This was supposed to be the... Like, if you didn't know what was going on, if you didn't know about their viral campaign and all that, you might have thought that this was real footage of real lost teenagers, lost and possibly presumed dead.
If I was running, I might run with that a little bit, like... The people who found this, like, they get sucked into something, going back to the woods, or...
I don't know if you know, but the original one was accompanied, I think, on, like, A&E or something. They did, like, it was, like, maybe even an hour-long special, but maybe it was only half an hour, that was called, like, The Curse of the Blair Witch, which, it's really cool to see, by the way. It's still well done, which was supposed to be, like, a documentary about this. Now, they were pretty upfront. I think you can spot places in it where they say, this is a fictional account. But it's made exactly like a documentary, one of those slightly credulous ones, where they talk to real people, they talk about the legends and the lore, they recreate some things. But it actually set up Blair Witch and the original Blair Witch Project. And I think doing some sort of crossover like that, a podcast or something like that, something, you know, something else that's like some new media... format, TikToks, scary TikToks.
Scary TikToks. They exist.
There's obviously not much to go on here. I think it's probably a horror movie that is best left. Whether you love it or hate it, it's. I would probably leave it in the 90s. But I'm willing to see what weird indie filmmaker man can do.
There were a couple Stephen King adaptations announced today. One is that Mike Flanagan, who has done, I think, the best Stephen King adaptations.
Yeah.
I think we'd all agree on that.
No. Rob Reiner made the two best Stephen King adaptations.
All right, fair enough. Wait, true. The Stand and... Not The Stand.
He didn't do Misery.
Stand By Me.
Misery and Stand By Me, yeah.
Interesting.
I think they're just the best written and best acted ones by a mile.
Really? Better than Dr. Sleep?
Yes.
But they're not Stephen King-y. They're like... They're not like...
I know what you're saying. Yeah. It's not horror Stephen King. Nevertheless, they are the best adaptations. They're the best movies.
I love Stand By Me, but I think I'd take... If I had to take one, I think I'd take Dr. Sleep.
That's insane. and I like Dr. Sleep. I watched a bit of Stand By Me the other day, and I was shocked at how good it is.
Yeah, it's really
good. Like, you could take any scene in it, and you're like, how are these kid actors so good? And I believe the answer is, all those kids were screwed up. It's like Corey Feldman. Yeah. Is that who it is? Yeah. Corey Feldman, River Phoenix, Will Wheaton, who we know was traumatized because his parents made him act.
Dr. Sleep didn't torture any kids.
I mean, that's great. Dr. Sleep loses a little for me for, like, somehow, and I like Dr. Sleep quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I think some of its CG is a little dodgy. I think its final act is a little too, I don't know, tropey or like
I get
too,
that. I get that.
Too straightforward. And I actually think that the threat in it needed to be a little bit more higher at times.
What's the other one with
I think most people would say that Shawshank Redemption is probably one of the best,
but they're wrong.
But also, by the way, there is stuff I just love in Dr. Sleep. And I like that it's so unconventional.
I still need to watch the director's cut of it.
At any rate, one of the best people. One in the top three.
We'll allow for it.
Yes.
Flanagan is a guy who, like, I think he loves Stephen King more than anybody else.
Yep.
And when you look
at his stuff feels Stephen King.
When you look at, like Haunting of Hill House and Midnight Mass and all the others, his particular vibe, which is to say, like, very character-centric, very rich characters. He always is very sympathetic towards his characters. You are never going to see some schlocky slasher from him that's, like, you know, nihilistic or something. That's just not who he is.
Right.
And so I think he gets the Stephen King horror ethos, to speak to what you were talking about, Randy, better than anybody else.
He has adapted something called Life of Chuck, which I've never read.
I've never heard of
it. It's a novella.
Okay.
Three separate stories linked to telebiography of Charles Krantz in reverse, beginning with his death from a brain tumor at 39 and ending with his childhood in a supposedly haunted house. Sounds very much in Mike Flanagan's wheelhouse.
I like this. That sounds like a cool structure. I don't want to know really too much about it because
That's all I want to know.
I know Flanagan is really good at that, like, reveals and stuff like that.
Yep.
So that sounds cool. So wait, where is this going to come out? Is this the theatrical release?
Just announced. It's being developed.
Okay.
It may not come out.
Okay.
But it's being developed.
All right.
The other one is that y'all's guy, James Wan.
Yep.
He is going to produce The Monkey, which is was first published as a booklet in 1980 and was included in Skeleton Crew.
Yeah.
And it's a tale about a clapping toy monkey with cymbals.
It's a little Monkey Shines monkey. Yeah. Was that the movie they made of it previously?
Yes.
So this has been adapted before?
I guess.
I would imagine so. If it
there
is
was
the
a movie called Monkey
that
Shines, and that would make more sense than just a... This is like a slightly catchier title than, say, The Monkey or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's also one I know nothing about. I've never read that short story.
It's going to star Theo James, who I don't know who that is.
White Lotus.
Oh, okay.
The newest season of White Lotus.
Okay, all right. Anyway, yeah.
So James Wan is producing and not
directing.
Not directing. Yeah, James Wan, who's best known for the Insidious and Conjuring movies. But he also directed a Fast and the Furious. He also directed Aquaman.
Yep.
So he's pretty versatile.
I like to think he's like, the monkey, it's not crazy enough. I'll pay for it.
I'll have Lee Winnell do a rewrite on the story.
But it is not, let's cut out the cancer malignant
That's how you get me on a James Wan project, by the way. You bring Lee Winnell in, I'm in. You get me on Insidious. So, this is a weird one. Nicolas Cage and Bill Skarsgård are working on making Lord of War 2 as a father-son project, basically. I think Bill Skarsgård will be Nicolas Cage's son in this.
Yeah,
so, Lord of War is a movie. I remember watching this back when Netflix sent out DVDs.
Okay, so we're talking about like mid 2000s, probably, right?
There was a period there. I don't remember if you remember this, where basically Netflix started selling their old discs.
Oh,
so basically you just keep a disc and they would send you the box for it.
Okay,
so Lord of War I rented, I liked, and I kept it. I paid the $8 or whatever, so I own Lord of War on DVD.
I did not know that was a thing that they did.
That was the thing they did. I had a few movies like that.
Came out in 2005.
So it is. He plays a Russian guy, which is weird.
Yuri Orlov.
Nobody's more Russian than Nicolas Cage.
What's funny is he doesn't do an accent or anything. He's just like an American born, American raised Russian guy.
Sure, sure. It's conceivable.
I think he has a brother in this.
Yes, played
by Jared Leto. They're Ukrainian refugees.
And then they're being hunted by a FBI or federal agent, Ethan Hawke.
Ethan Hawke, that's right. And they are.
That is an interesting cast.
It was inspired by the stories of real life arms dealers. And it shows you the inside ins and outs of international arms trade. Like, at some point he goes to Uganda and basically is like working for a dictator and he's terrified.
I remember the trailers looked a little pop.
It has a pop style, but it is definitely this is like a Scorsese, like, look at this debauchery. Look where this is wrought.
Right. Okay.
Kind of thing. Like, he's sympathetic, but he's definitely in a bad job.
Would you call it a serious movie? Is it a serious drama?
It's closer to serious. It's not wild Nicolas Cage stuff.
Right.
It's the same director, Andrew Niccol.
Andrew Niccol. If I'm not mistaken, in the year 2025, then this movie will have been 20 years old.
Yes.
So we're about to get a sequel to a nearly 20-year-old movie that's not particularly well-known. Like, it's not unknown.
No.
But it's an interesting call. I wonder how that one happened.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I really liked it. I haven't watched it in probably 15 years at least.
Yeah, I feel like I watched it like the past 5 years or so.
Yep, rings a bell.
It held up.
But I'll definitely watch the new one if they do it. I'll see it. Moving over to gaming side of things a little bit, sort of. Critical Role has announced a new series called Candela Obscura that is going to be a monthly horror drama that follows an esoteric...
Real quick, that's a word like candle?
Candela, like, yes.
Okay.
Monthly horror drama that follows an esoteric order of investigators as they use centuries of knowledge to fight back a mysterious source of corruption and bleed. At the beginning of each episode, an inciting incident occurs, prompting a team or circle of investigators to uncover and solve the mystery at hand, and the series was designed so that viewers and listeners can pick up at any point. So they're going to be standalone, hour-long episodes.
And the art, at least, or not art, but the promotional picture, photograph of the voice actors who are all going to play the game, it's a very lush-looking photo that makes them all look like, what, like sort of Victorian?
Victorian or 1920s or...
Yeah, they're kind of all classily dressed. They look like old-world investigators who's like, oh, he's from the Museum of Archaeology, and that's the professor of physics.
So it looks like the main Critical Role players are Laura Bailey and Ashley Johnson. They're bringing in guest stars Robbie Damon and Anjali Beemanim. And Matt Mercer is narrating the first chapters, but he may not be the whole thing. And it starts with three standalone episodes. I don't listen to Critical Role because I don't have 4 hours every day to listen to a gigantic thing.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in this. Like a standalone sort of like Victorian horror thing sounds interesting. The premise is interesting. And they're not using D&D. They're using Illuminated Worlds, a D6-based system. Best used for shorter arcs, emphasizing story and character progression, and that's going to come out from Darrington Press, the publishing arm of Critical Role.
That's interesting. So they're using their proprietary system,
right?
That interests me more certainly than Critical Role. Critical Role is all a little too goofy for me.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going like supernatural and like spooky and stuff like that. There's still almost inevitably got to be some goofiness to it, I assume.
I assume, but I don't know.
But the less there is, the more likely it is I'll try it.
It premieres on May 25th, which is as we about 2 weeks from now.
Okay, guess we'll find out.
I may give it a listen. We'll see. All right, let's talk trailers. Actually, I guess before we talk trailers, let's talk two more things.
Yep.
One, Babylon 5 news dropped.
Oh, yeah.
So the Babylon 5 is getting an animated movie, which JMS, the J. Mouse Straczynski, says is already done.
Right. This was something they kept so under wraps that they had somehow made it without anybody knowing about it.
Yeah.
Whether they're going to do the remake show, the reboot show, is which seems a little less and less
off
likely
to the side, that's a different,
with
different
each
story.
Passing, yep. You know, month. But still unknown, not a definite no yet.
Right.
But I guess he like they must have liked to like prime the pump or whatever, done this movie off to the side. We don't know anything about like quite what it looks like.
Nope.
We don't know if it's, you know, where when it would be set, if it's going to use classic characters or what. But it's apparently done. I'm interested to see it because
I am too. I would like more Babylon 5. JMS says it is the most. It says it's very true to the series
and kind of a love letter to the fans.
Yeah.
I think he said it's one of those things where it's like if it does, if it's like goes wrong, if it's not good, that'll be too bad. But but Babylon 5 hasn't, you know, like its heyday was the 1990s. That was a long ways back. If it's good, though, that'll be very cool. I would love to revisit the station, the setting, all the aliens.
Yeah,
and
mind you, I'm deeply loving Deep Space Nine right now, but I still love Babylon 5.
Yeah, I would love to. You know who I need to see in it is I need to see Londo.
Yeah.
But also, I would like to see anybody else. Ivanova,
Chloe Christian Sinclair. Still around. Peter Jurassic still alive, or did he die? A lot of people in Babylon 5
Babylon 5... Like 90% of them are dead.
Andreas Katsoulis died. The doctor died. Jerry Garibaldi.
Right.
Gerald Quinn, something like that.
Is Lanier alive? Billy Mummy?
I believe Billy Mummy is still alive, yes.
And Stephen First?
Stephen First is dead.
Okay.
And then the captain is alive. Not Jeffrey Sinclair, but...
Sheridan. Yeah, because he was in Tron.
He was in
movie.
Tron.
Yeah. Anyway... Bruce Boxleitner. Yeah.
So they've got a fair amount of people they could still use, and then you could get... If also, you're doing animation, you can do voice acting.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if they did a new voice actor for any given character.
Weirdly, like, Tara Strong is going to voice everybody else.
Sure.
Lake Bell. Tara Strong and Lake Bell will voice every other character.
I would like, you know, they've done some good animation projects on Netflix. So as long as the animation, I don't know what I can quite picture what would be the right style of animation, but I need to look kind of realistic.
What if it's super anime and it's like Dragon Ball style? And Garibaldi is like, now I throw my fireball.
Castlevania, if it was closer to that anime style than, say, like a big blocky cartoony style, I would actually prefer the anime in that case.
Yeah.
But, like, mostly I feel like it's one that you want to look quasi-real.
Yeah.
Maybe it could... honestly, if it used a little bit of the rotoscoping tech that they did over digital models in a Dragon... What's the...
Dragon Prince?
Dragon Prince. Yeah. I think that could fit Babylon 5.
It'll be fun because they'll be able to use... We'll probably get some cool, like, Star Fury battles and stuff.
Yeah. They can do better space battles than they were ever able to do in the 90s.
Yep. So, yeah, I'm kind of psyched for this.
Yep.
The other big news, which I guess we should have led with because it's a comic book podcast, but Jim Lee has been promoted to president of DC Comics.
Right.
I believe this to be a net negative to neutral thing.
Yeah.
Jim Lee is responsible in a lot of ways for the stuff we didn't like in New 52. He did the redesigns. He
keeps a foot in the 1990s.
He's got to be the guy that keeps trying to make Wildstorm happen, right? Because that was his thing.
I would imagine so.
They keep trying to make Wildstorm happen inside the DCU, and
including the most recent Wildcats thing, which was a bit of a wash.
Yep.
It was okay.
It's okay.
But like as we talked about at the time, one of the things is like they did character redesigns, and they were all downgrades.
Yeah.
It was kind of like how they, in Star Trek Discovery, they're Klingons.
Yeah.
Now, people have nostalgic fondness for, like, kind of the original Klingons and their vibe, and there's a lot of some good actors who played them.
Yep.
But then they love the new look of the Klingons, Worf, and all the Klingons we would later see in Star Trek Next Generation and Deep Space Nine.
Nobody was clamoring for new Klingons?
No one was clamoring for new Klingons. Everybody liked some version of the ones that they had. And then they brought out these new ones, and they were a downgrade.
There was not a cacophony of Klingons clamoring?
Is this that old bit from Johnny Carson?
I don't know what I'm doing.
Anyway.
It's a good Johnny Carson bit.
It is. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Nope.
They had the dude from Jack Webb from Dragnet. Type in Johnny Carson and... Dragnet.
Okay, all right.
And you will see a really good, very clean humor, but really immaculately timed sketch.
Yep.
That will remind you of what Randy was just blabbing about.
I just remember Kreskin.
What were we talking about?
We're talking about Jim Lee at DC.
Jim Lee at DC. One of the maybe only really cool things out of the Image early days is the visuals. And, like, if you can't make the Wildcats and Spawn and stuff like that, I know Spawn is part of Wildstorm, but if you can't make Image characters of old look cool, then you're kind of missing half the reason they were around.
I also say Jim Lee is a pretty good guy.
Yeah,
I
mean, no, he is known for working really well with talent.
Yeah, no, I'm good for him. I'm fine. It's great, but it's not like when I hear like this guy's in charge of DC, I want to be like, oh, that's great. Like when Marie Javins was promoted to editor in chief, I was like, that's great.
Yeah.
She knows what she's doing, and I feel like a lot of the good stuff coming out of DC is on her watch. But there's still some people in the higher ups I don't think know what they're doing.
Yeah.
The one thing, you know, what I always remember is that Jim Lee was the one who got Alan Moore to come back and do ABC Comics in the 90s.
And then he sold it to DC, and I believe Alan Moore probably feels betrayed.
Yes, he probably does. But that will show you like how well he works with talent. If they were to bring it, there's nobody I can really think of right now who's like who hasn't done comics who'd be like some amazing get, like George R.R. Martin or somebody like that. He's even already done comics, if he's sort of surprised and like found some fresh infusion like that, that'd be a real justification.
Here's my one little glimmer of sunshine that I don't know will even happen, but IDW had a big shakeup recently.
Yeah.
Scott Dunbier is still over there, but you know, depending on how long they last, Scott Dunbier is one of the best editors in the business. He was the guy who made Wildstorm really work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's the one who was Alan Moore's liaison. He is one of the best editors. If IDW were to fail, he is a guy who worked for Jim Lee, and I wonder if he would come back to DC.
Interesting.
Because having Dunbier, basically, DC could use some editorial shakeup, and I believe having Dunbier over there again as a senior editor would be great. And I think he might bring some talent and be able to do some stuff. That's the only thing I can see, like, this might make that possible.
Interesting prediction, perhaps.
But that's it. But other than that, who's in charge of DC really doesn't matter, because who's in charge of it next week, who knows.
That's true.
There's a lot of shakeups at WB and that kind of thing. But, you know, good for Jim Lee.
Yeah. I do legit wish him well.
Yeah. All right, we got some trailers to talk about. There were a couple anticipated sequels. We should probably start with those. First of all, of course, the sequel everybody's looking forward to this summer, Meg 2, The Trench.
Is that actually hitting this summer?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
It is. It's not too far off, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you don't want to let the marketing campaign go too long for Meg 2.
No. Let's quick rewind. Meg is about a giant prehistoric shark that has survived in the deepest ocean depths. A megalodon. It was a schlocky movie starring Jason Statham. It was a PG-13 giant shark movie that kind of... and you know, who else was in it? Who was the big tech entrepreneur who was like a D-bag?
Oh, it was...
Rainn Wilson.
Yeah, Rainn Wilson.
Right. He did a pretty good job with his role. But it was a little bit of a... You know, it felt not quite paint by numbers, but it did feel like an assembly line movie a bit.
A little bit. But it had its charms.
It had its charms. I think it's a solidly fun movie to put on in the background and mostly ignore.
The second one hits in August.
August, okay.
So Meg 2, they discover a trench in the undersea, deep in the undersea,
yep.
That lets in not one, but multiple megalodons, as well as other creatures.
Yep.
Well, apparently they're pack hunters.
They're pack hunters now. And they have to send out Jason Statham and his team in super mega armor to the underwater to fight them.
Yes, they do.
That's an aspect of this trailer.
This trailer is ridiculous. Like, it's not Sharknado, but it's not far from Sharknado.
The trailer opens up with a, 65 million years ago, yeah. And there's a T-Rex.
Like, there was only one king, or whatever, and they show, like, a T-Rex,
trouncing,
you know.
Trouncing through a forest to the edge of the ocean.
But and it kills something.
And then from behind, the megalodon pops up and, like...
So much larger than the Tyrannosaurus Rex and just, like, one bite.
There's a lot of deep blue sea sharks eating people here. A lot of surprise, the shark ate you.
Yes, it looks like they are taking the most famous scene from Deep Blue Sea, and they're like, what if that was the movie?
What if that was the movie?
I will say, though, the first one, it had, like, one of those moments, but it was fairly bloodless. This does not look bloodless.
Well, I don't know.
There's a lot more death. I'm sure it's PG-13.
Probably. It's going to be pretty bloodless.
It might be bloodless, but at least there's going to be a higher body count.
You know, I guess the original Jaws was PG, and that included some really grisly shots of, like, severed limbs, and, of course, Quint gurgling in his own blood.
Yes.
Sure.
In one of the bloodiest scenes I've ever seen in a movie. But that was the style of the 1970s.
Anyway, of the people in this room, I believe Nick is very excited about Meg 2.
Yep.
I think it looks dumb fun. I don't know if I'd say it looks like the best thing coming out.
I agree that it looks dumb. And I agree that I laughed at that trailer.
I watched Cocaine Bear. I mean, come on.
I also watched Cocaine Bear, but we said very
You're going to end up watching this because Patreon will make you watch it.
No.
So
I will pay the Patreon to make you watch
Meg
2.
I'm for it. So I saw the original Meg in theaters kind of with a friend who was... Her kid was kind of just starting to get into spooky movies, and this was kind of considered like a little easy first step.
Yeah.
It's not like horror, but it was kind of like darker adventure, kind of, you know, like edging up against that. And the fun enough one to see in the theater, but also dopey, very dopey.
Yeah.
I had like been hearing, I think, that the trailer was kind of bonkers and fun, And so I was like, oh, hey, let's go see the second one. And now I'm slightly regretting my impulsive call to see it at the theater.
Never know. It might be fun.
I mean, I can have fun watching a bad movie, but I'm going to need to see it at the Alamo Drafthouse and have a few shots first. And only then will I be ready for a movie that has not one, not two, but I believe three megalodons.
Yes.
Honestly, the place where though where I did check out a bit was when they showed that they have super suits, or whatever those things are that amp up their strength. That
what are they exosuits? That
Dave, what do they amplify?
You is that what the line was in G.I.
Joe? Something like that. Yes.
Yeah.
What do they call
enhance? What do they accelerate?
You. They accelerate you.
Yeah. These look better than those suits from G.I. Joe.
You don't want to ever even bring those up.
Oh, wow.
Only in, like when Tom Cruise had, like, mech armor and stuff, it was, like, in that future, like,
Edge of Tomorrow.
Now, that was a good movie. It was built into the premise. With Meg, it's not that I want it to be more realistic, but maybe, like, a little more Crichton influence and a little less influence from G.I. Joe movie and accelerator suits.
This just dropped, apparently, Beetlejuice 2. Has a release date of September 6, 2024. Michael Keaton, Jenna Ortega. I feel like maybe that shouldn't happen.
It probably shouldn't. Is Tim Burton going to direct it? Tim Burton, who hasn't made a good movie in like 20 years?
That seems possible. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I like Beetlejuice too. Sure. I'd say I like Beetlejuice also.
Michael Keaton is on a return tour of all of his old movies.
Yeah.
Mr. Grandmom.
Yeah. I'd watch that. I understand sometimes you do need money.
Yeah. Michael Keaton can't need money.
He was not like a mega star.
What would the sequel to Gung Ho be?
Gung Hoer. Gung Ho 2, Gung Hoer.
Gung Ho 2025.
There you go. Oh my god, that does sound like a future thing. But then, like, it's kind of George Wendt in there as well.
Randy,
is he alive? He's alive.
He's still in the insane asylum of Dream Team 2.
Yes, Dream Team 2. I would watch. It's Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah.
I don't know, Stephen First.
Yeah,
you can't do it.
So is
they've got to escape the asylum and get to California for the funeral of Stephen First's character.
I like it. Little Big Chillish.
Was Gung Ho about a? They were like it was an automotive industry.
Auto plant that was taken over by the Japanese.
Yep.
And they American blue collar workers.
It was the wacky integration.
They did not like the efficiency of the Japanese.
Right, you know, I bet they learned to like them by the end. They probably said about 8 million racist things.
They all learned to get along, and the Japanese people learned the Japanese management learned.
Did they learn to party down?
They learned to party a little bit. Well, yeah. The Americans learned to party a little less. Wow. And they met in the middle, Dave.
And then kind of the dark comedy drama is the clean and more sober.
More clean, more sober.
Get clean, get
sober. The Fast and the Furious style.
Clean and sober to clean. Get sober.
Too clean, too sober.
Get soberer.
Anyway, this probably shouldn't happen.
No.
No.
But while we're talking about sequels, the other trailer we saw was for Dune 2.
Right.
Which is not a great... It's very much... I kind of don't... I know they're going to, but I want them to not do any more trailers.
Yeah.
Because this is a cool little one moment. All it is about Atreides riding the worm, which right. is not a euphemism.
This should not be a sequel. This should be Dune Part 2.
Isn't it called Dune Part 2?
Is it called Dune Part 2, or is it Dune 2?
They might have called it Dune 2, but like everybody knows that... Or I think anybody who has followed it at all closely knows that they just took the book and broke it in half. It is not like... Like,
except for the people who didn't realize this while watching the first one,
right? And were like, "That's kind of a bit of a
that's a dumb ending."
That ending is kind of weak.
Yeah,
my wife being among those
people. I thought Doom was going to be boring.
Yeah,
and I wound up really enjoying it, like so much so that I saw it on HBO Max first, and then I went and saw it in the theater.
And then you traveled back in time to buy it from Netflix from the physical disc. And then have them send you the box for it.
No, that's how I got Get Clean and Get Sober. But anyway, I am now a little hyped for this, especially after playing Dune Imperium. I'm like, oh, I kind of like this world.
Yeah.
And so that's probably not the right way to go into it. I think I was probably better to going low expectations and enjoying it more.
I mean, like, I feel like...
I don't think there's...
Denis Villeneuve, the director... Deliver like he is pretty consistent in his visions.
Yeah,
and most of the time I'm not big on his visions. I think Dune was one of my favorite projects from him, and I had a lot of like in it. And I do not see him dropping the ball. The only thing is like it might not be great. That would be, I think, the thing. But I bet it's going to be at least good to very good.
I honestly think it's going to be about the same heights of the first one. I think it's going to deliver.
But I was like a bit more critical of the first one, I think, than many. And so what I saw in this trailer with its washed out palettes and maybe showing, even though I know it was just edited down, very edited down, maybe showing as much of the scene where Paul rides the worm, as they say. I would not have shown it.
Should be like a crescendo of kind of like a really big thing.
But it is not going to be. It's not going to be the end of that movie. It's going to take place early on in it. It's.
But we also got glimpses of what Florence Pugh's character, Austin Butler's.
Right. So Austin Butler is going to play Fade Rautha, the nephew of Baron Harkonnen, and like his. Kind of the person he's sort of grooming as his replacement, but he's a bit less of a thinker and more of a duelist and killer.
Yeah,
and so I think Austin Butler's probably going to do well in that, but you don't see him talk.
I just want him to do his voice from
Elvis.
Elvis,
where you going there, Fremen? Florence Pugh is playing the daughter of the Emperor of the Universe, who like has been seen. Maybe they haven't shown him in this, but he's kind of the big guy on top who was like manipulating all the events on Arrakis so that the Atreides would get wiped out. And she kind of gets caught up in the machinations in what'll be the second story.
We also see Josh Brolin, who may I guess did not. Get killed in the first one,
right? Did he not?
I thought everyone.
Who was the one who got? Oh no, it was other guy Momoa. Who got stabbed.
Duncan Idaho.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think we ever saw what happened to Josh Brolin, but he is like their kind of. He's like the gruff.
What's his name?
What is he like? His sword master.
Yeah, sword master.
Yeah, Duncan Idaho. The other guy is
Gurney Halleck.
Because that's a memorable name.
Those names have if you're a follower of the that's lore, true. It is burned into your brain.
I don't know if I'll see precisely. This. I don't know if I'll see this in theaters, but I might.
I definitely will.
I feel like it's a theatrical experience kind of thing. That did add to it, I think.
I love the world. I thought Vinov did a great job of realizing. I love the little
copters, I wanted his the ornithopters looked amazing. Cool. They will. That's probably as good as it gets for them.
The sound they made.
Weirdly, I thought that the Arrakis itself could probably stand to have looked a little more alien and a little less like earthly deserts. Like just some weirder like. In real life, you do get weird rock structures worn by down by the wind and sand and stuff like that out in deserts. I think seeing a little bit more of that would have been kind of cool.
Definitely, Zendaya is going to get a little bit more screen time in this
for
one.
For sure. I'll be curious to see what he chooses to take from the books. And I thought I had heard that there was like some elements of some of the stuff that was in the sequel book, that was the second book that might make it into this, and or maybe it will set up, because I think he does, if it does well, I think he's interested in doing at least one more movie.
I like how they're gonna they've all said that this is the completion of the story, and then I like that they're gonna stealth at the end. It's like to be continued.
It'll be a real like cheesy mid-credit sequence. But wait, I thought you had the worm. No, the worm got out. Uh-oh.
Well, are they still doing the HBO Max, the Bene Gesserit?
Man, that one is in perpetual limbo. I'm betting it won't happen.
I really like Rebecca Ferguson.
It's a great world setting to play around with, and there's so much that they could show that doesn't make it into the movie about like how the Mentats work, how their sort of mega corporation Chome.
Are there like 30 books?
I think
five acknowledged ones,
five or six by Herbert. Frank Herbert, and then a bunch more by his son and Kevin J. Anderson.
Yeah, I think that's right. That are maybe not
that are more a little bit more on the kind of like pop sci-fi side of things, and a little less literati.
I mean, that was
sci-fi.
Kevin J. Anderson's style. He did that for Star Wars too.
Yeah,
I liked Kevin J. Anderson's Star Wars books.
Go back and read them again.
I'm just saying, back in the day, I liked them.
I did too, but if you look at them, they don't feel very Star Wars in a lot of ways. Yeah, there's
you mean like Lando Calrissian's city built on the back of like a dozens of Imperial walkers?
Yeah, that the ship that's like the Sun Killer is like a tiny ship, which is not how Star Wars does things.
Yeah,
there's it feels very much like someone who didn't quite get Star Wars.
Right, a little more sci-fi, a little less Star Wars.
We were desperate for Star Wars at that point, and we will take whatever trilogy you gave us.
Yep. But anyway, yeah, I think the trailer is slightly underwhelming for Dune 2, but I think it's probably going to be quite a good movie.
That's where I'm at too. I'm fine with one more underwhelming trailer.
Right.
I need my expectations.
At this point, I think most people are probably pretty already on board.
Yeah. Also saw the second trailer for Oppenheimer.
Yep.
This is one that I'm not super interested in. I'm just not a big Nolan guy.
Yep.
I like Cillian Murphy just fine, but it's a solid. This is a good trailer.
Yeah. It's a. It definitely seems to be all about the sort of like they intercut like things that have like what do you call those things that track radiation meter? It's like a meter for radiation.
Oh, God.
Not a spectrometer.
No, that's where my head went too.
But it makes that clacking sound, yeah. And it's like it's eerie. You see little flashes.
Isotope.
Yeah,
it's got a name, and I can't remember it right now. It's a radiactor findy thing.
A radiation clicker box.
Radiation clicker box. Yes.
I think is
people
what
are
called.
Screaming at their radios right now.
Yes, everybody knows what it is. They know what it is. I'm sorry.
I'm checking.
Isosceles meter.
Yeah. Type radiation detector.
It's
and you're
the
gonna
thermometer,
get
right? Radiation thermometer.
it is called a Geiger counter.
That's it. Geiger counter.
I guess if you want to be a scientist.
I did type into Google radiation clicker box to find that information.
If we really wanted to drive people and say it, we would have been like, no, that's not it.
And they show flashes of like the explosion of like the nuclear reaction and stuff in this. So there's this sense of momentum and gloom and stuff hanging over this. But it also shows the kind of historical thing that I'd kind of forgotten was part of the Manhattan Project, which is that they're worried the Germans are ahead of us on this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
and so they're like, we need to assemble a town in the desert, get all the best scientists who can help us get this thing done, lock them away until they're done with it.
Well, they assembled the town because they couldn't get the people that they wanted because they would want to bring their families. So that was the only way to get their families was to build the town.
Now, right.
And then cordon everybody off.
And see, Nolan is going to make a very serious human movie about this, whereas what I want is a wacky sitcom about all the families living in Manhattan Project Village.
They're like, are you going to go out for groceries? And they're like, honey, I'm irradiated. I have to shower off the radiation first.
Don't forget your Geiger counter.
Don't forget the rad count box thing.
So here's the thing for me. I had no interest in this.
Yeah.
I'm very wishy-washy on Nolan.
Sure.
I find him to be very watchable, but very forgettable.
Yeah.
I
find him to be semi-watchable.
But forgettable.
Tenet hurt me.
I hated Tenet on first watch. I've rewatched it multiple times, and taking it like various pieces, I really enjoy it.
I'm not against movies that have to grow on you. I've occasionally had movies that have done it, but I can tell Tenet is not going to be that one for me.
Definitely a lesson that Cocaine Bear should remember from Cocaine Bear, which is a good trailer, maybe you just, that's the movie you watch.
But Nolan has never done a biopic, right? This is
he did the historical thing, Dunkirk.
Well, right. That's true.
I did like Dunkirk.
Also, I don't know if this is isn't a biopic because this isn't about the whole life story. It is about the Manhattan Project specifically.
Right.
With Oppenheimer.
But it's called Oppenheimer.
But it's focused on Oppenheimer and his life. And
by the way, if you had an exclamation point and made it a musical, I would also watch that.
So I think it'll be interesting to see.
He's not giving away his shot.
What he does with that form. Also very interesting that Cillian Murphy is the lead.
Right?
He's
a great actor.
He's hands it down. I mean, he's very good. He's amazing in the Netflix, the crime.
Yeah, Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders.
But he was also, he was also the lead as far back as 28 Days Later.
Right?
Right. But it's been a while since he's been a lead of, like, a major motion picture
not been the lead of a Nolan movie, which is there's an article about him going around saying he's like, I never wanted to ask him for it, but this is really what I wanted.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's fun. Because he has been in a lot of Nolan
movies.
He's
not been the lead.
He is one of Nolan's traveling troupe of, and they all kind of, The addition here is Matt Damon, which I thought was fun.
There's also somebody notable is playing his wife. It's
Emily Blunt?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then
like,
somebody
Kenneth Branagh shows up.
Who's he playing? He's not playing Einstein, is he?
No. I don't know who's playing Einstein. Then Robert Downey Jr.
Maybe they should play it like Dirty Dozen style. It's like Oppenheimer, Einstein, even up.
It's very Truman style.
If you presented it as a heist, I would watch that too. There's so many ways to get me to watch this movie, and Nolan is not the guy to make it.
I was not interested until this trailer, and now I'm interested.
It's a good trailer.
You know what's interesting is
Florence Pugh plays Gene Tatlock.
Sure.
I don't know who that is.
Robert
Downey Jr. is playing Louis Strauss. Gary Oldman is playing Harry Truman.
Okay.
Jack Quaid is playing Richard Feynman. Josh Hartnett is playing Ernest Lawrence. Alden Ehrenreich is in this. Rami Malek is in it. David Dastmalchian. There's a lot of notable people in this.
So I've got a friend who's she's like the biggest Nolan fan of all time. So I'm going to be seeing this in theater.
And also, she is in her mind married to Cillian Murphy.
She is in her mind married to Cillian Murphy.
So you are absolutely going to have to see this in theater.
Is it Cillian Murphy or is it Killian Murphy?
I thought it was Cillian.
Even after all this time, I don't know.
When he's in comedies, it's Cillian. When he's playing a murderer, it's Killian. I'm
sure, he loves that joke.
What? It's obviously true. Peaky Blinders, Cillian Murphy.
Well, that makes sense. And
I'm looking at this. The cast, just Casey Affleck, David Krumholtz, Matthew Modine, James Remar.
I mean,
like, that is a huge cast.
He can command people.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, James Remar is one of these guys who fascinates me.
Yeah,
because he has been in like the cheesiest stuff.
Oh yeah.
But I've always liked him because, like, I first knew him from The Warriors.
Yep.
He's good at playing bad guys, but I have seen him in serious things periodically. A lot of people know him as Dexter's dad from Dexter. Oh. But, like, it's interesting to see him in, like, dropped in a serious movie. I'm sure he can pull it off.
Tony Goldwyn is in this. And also Scott Grimes, the guy from Seth MacFarlane's Star Trek...
Orville?
Orville.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you were like, we're getting into names I don't know. Oh, yeah, he's like the big doofus man.
The pilot.
Yeah, big doofus man.
Yes, big doofus man.
It's quite the cast assembled. I'll be curious to see it. For me, actually, the biggest point of interest is I don't know much about the actual development of the Manhattan Project. I don't know what the big scares were. I mean, I know it was like, oh, well, they dramatized one. They didn't know for sure if it might blow up the world.
Right.
They actually thought that there was like a low, as he says to Matt Damon, he's like, there's like a 0. Something chance. And he's like, well, I'd rather it be zero.
So I had to look it up because I had to know if I was saying it correctly. It is, in fact, Cillian Murphy.
Okay. Well, he is less silly than Killy in his roles, and so we can probably remember that.
Well, in this one, you know,
if you run into him, he is more likely to kill you than silly you.
In this one, however, building the atomic bomb, he's definitely Killian.
He's Cillian Murphy, yes.
All right, last trailer, next goal wins. This is Taika Waititi's next one.
This is Taika Waititi does Ted Lasso.
It's... So it's based on a real story.
Looks like the Jamaican bobsled team. Yeah, a little cool bit running. Of that.
Yeah,
side
basically
too.
It's a guy who is gets fired from coaching soccer and goes to American Samoa to coach a team that has never won. And is yeah, it's bad news bears and all that kind of stuff. Here's the thing, Ted Lasso works for me because it is such a like affirming and positive show. This guy is much more like the throwing chairs jerk of a coach who doesn't. And I'm like,
You know by the time the movie
ends, he'll be human. Yes.
I
don't like that arc as much. I've seen that on Big Shot on Disney Plus. It's fine.
Yeah.
But if this actually was like Ted Lasso or something, or a little weirder, it actually looks very straightforward for a Taika Waititi project.
Yeah.
Like, his previous creator-owned thing was a little boy whose buddy was Hitler.
Right, like, a little more out there.
He was a German child who was growing up in Nazi Germany, yes. And his imaginary friend was a friendly
version of Hitler.
Yes.
That was weird. This seems very restrained for Taika Waititi.
Maybe he's trying out a gear shift.
He might need to be a little restrained after that last Thor movie.
He might. He might.
That's true.
But also, after that last Thor movie, and also Jojo Rabbit, which I thought was okay but not great.
Yeah.
I think I'm kind of in the same camp that Dave is, a little bit sort of like, I may not really want to see
everything that he does.
This falls into my I follow certain people. I love Michael Fassbender, and I haven't seen him in a while do anything because he's been driving F1 racing cars.
Okay,
you want a Fassbender like Beckham?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I guess I don't have anybody I follow to that level. I guess.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, same here. There's not a. I can't think of a single actor that I would follow all their projects. Any project, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like what we do with comic creators. If they do certain things,
but I don't have a comic creator, I would follow every project either.
Once upon a time, Andrew I was. Baker, I tried.
You've probably read everything he's ever written,
but that was a mistake.
Would I think you would say probably his Uncanny X-Men run? Oh, not exactly something to
that's
go back
something
to.
I would never go back to.
Yeah. And if you could have warned yourself off of it,
correct?
You would probably try everything Grant Morrison does.
No, that's you.
I mean that is totally. Cause...
Let's remember his recent Green Lantern run.
Yeah, I didn't read most of that.
There's definitely
yeah, like the people right now in that vein are like Jed McKay, Chip Zdarsky, Ryan North is on
Tom
that
Taylor.
List. Tom Taylor maybe I'll try. No, because I didn't read his Neverlanders thing.
Yeah,
like there's still like there's nobody who like I will follow to everything. If you're on a project that doesn't interest me, I don't care how much I like your other work. And this,
oh, interesting.
This looks okay. But I don't think there's anybody who's like 100% always going to read all their stuff.
Even Darwin Cook did some projects that were like...
Although I did go back to that one because there wasn't enough Darwin Cook work. But
is that weird little indie one?
That, what he did with Gilbert Durant.
Did you read the Superman Kryptonite?
I went after he passed. I got that in hardcover, yes.
Okay.
But Superman Kryptonite.
Remember the one that Tim Sale...
You mean the one where the dog jumped into the lava?
The dog jumps into the lava? Yeah.
Man, you'd think that Tom King wrote it.
We went to the same place.
Yep.
Speaking of Tom King and animal cruelty, we're going to be back after this, and we're going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. And we're
if you know anything about it, you know what we mean.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with that and a little bit more. All right, so to close out this week's show... We would like to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which means it's time for the spoiler warning.
Yep.
We're going to talk about the whole movie. We will spoil things. We recommend. We all liked it.
Yep. You have heard the rumors, and the rumors are true, that there is a trigger warning worth noting for just about everybody, which is that there is some animal cruelty stuff in it. You know, it deals with sort of Rocket's backstory, which is flashbacked throughout the movie.
It's harsh, and it is ever-present. Like, if you can't handle... the animal cruelty thing
an animal in a cage or something
like
that.
You may want to watch this on video where you can fast forward through it.
Right.
But that'd be fast forwarding through the entire movie.
It would be a lot of it.
It would be tough. It'd be tough. But anyway, that's the sort of one thing that's worth knowing about if that's going to bother you.
Yep.
But
that's your spoiler warning. We recommend go see it. Don't spoil it for yourself right now.
It is a good time. It's a pretty good close, and I think we would all recommend it.
But if you have seen it, you can listen to us talk about it.
Right.
Or if you're one of those weirdos who doesn't mind things being spoiled, which I don't understand.
I don't understand it.
All right. So let's talk about this. Dave, I think you and I both read Rocket Raccoon back in the day.
Yes.
Nick, have you ever read the original Rocket Raccoon stuff?
I've never read the Mantlo.
It's bonkers.
Mantlo wrote with Walt, not Walt Simpson,
Mike Mignola.
Mike Mignola on art. And it is, it's like bonkers, a little goofy, like... They are all the critters are on Half World, where it turns out they're like help. They're like trauma animals for
Half World. Looks like a dark Alice in Wonderland, slightly futuristic, but kind of Alice in Wonderlandy. And there's like these crazy people called the Loonies, who are human and who are cared for by these animals. And the animals seem a little bit bonkers themselves.
Yep.
There is a little bit of like that Alice in Wonderland theme, but. Rocket Raccoon was like sort of like the protector.
He's
a
sheriff.
He's like a sheriff or something, but I think maybe a bit of an outlaw too. There's some evil clown bad guys.
There's some evil clowns.
And weirdly, it's a little hyper violent.
Yeah,
like when somebody would get shot, like their blood would splash onto the wall behind them.
No,
as much as they did show that in the 80s, but they did show
that.
Do you
think Gunn was like, "This is my jam"?
Well, the thing is, like, it doesn't bear much resemblance. When we saw them, they had Lila the Otter, who is his love interest in the comics.
Yep.
I thought maybe they were going to do, like, Half-World kind of thing. This is not very much like it. They are doing a different thing.
And to be fair, the comics had already kind of moved away from that.
Yeah.
The Rocket Raccoon that Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning were writing about in the mid-2000s, who would inspire the movie, was closer to the movie.
Yes.
And
don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I wanted Half World and the Loonies.
Right.
I'm perfectly happy with what they did.
But this does incorporate Lyle the Otter.
It does.
And Teef the Walrus. Teef the Walrus, yeah.
Teef's and Floor.
And Floor was Floor the Rabbit in the... I think Floor the Rabbit was original, right?
I think that might be original.
Yeah. Anyway, they're all experimental. They're cute animals that have been experimented on, given cybernetics by the High Evolutionary. And they are bonding, and they give themselves names.
Yes.
And they decide that they are... Once all this experimentation is done... That they will, because they're kind of they're cooperating with it.
Yeah.
I mean, not that much choice, but they're like,
well,
no.
They've been given the, you will be rewarded.
Yeah, they're
for
like,
this.
Once he's done, he's going to create his utopia and we'll go live there. Which,
that,
of course,
maybe
is not true.
Not so much.
You know, I don't know where James Gunn stands, but if you had told me that he is an animal rights activist.
Yeah.
And like a vegan, and I'm not using that necessarily in like in any sort of negative way. I'm just a purely factual way. I would say, oh, I believe it. This movie feels like that. Those scenes are meant to, you know, have implications about factory farming, animal experimentation, animal testing, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So definitely, that's a thing.
But also, it's not just about them being animals; about them being people. Like this is very much the like. Someone experimenting on someone, and the prisoner's dilemma kind of thing too. Sort of like they are prisoners, and when they try to rebel, things go badly.
Right. What do you call it? Who's the actor who plays the High Evolutionary?
I can't pronounce his name.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's in Peacemaker.
I thought he did a great job.
He's fantastic. He plays a psychotic villain in the same way. I mean, everybody liked Jonathan Majors' Kang, even though Jonathan Majors turns out maybe a bit of a piece of shit.
Right.
But his Kang was a good villain. I think High Evolutionary is similar to, but maybe even better, because he's a pure bad guy. Like,
His motivation may be
to, like, I'm going to perfect the world. But as Rocket points out later, he's like, no, you just didn't like it the way it was.
Right.
And he does a great job of portraying this, the kind of cruelty of him.
Yeah.
Where he is a guy who will kind of, like, buddy up to like, Rocket in a way.
Yep.
Like... But it's purely for, like, what he can do, that he's showing these signs of intelligence and creativity. But, he would incinerate him in a second if he was done with him.
Yeah, in the next minute, he will say, cut his brain out.
Yeah. That actor did a fantastic job with
that. He's really good, yeah. He was a villain I love to hate. I was glad to see how scarred up he was at the end.
Yep.
And I was ready to see him get killed.
Yep. And so this is a movie that starts by showing Rocket in that sort of peril when he was like this like little just adorable
baby
little
raccoon.
Baby raccoon, very scared. Everybody is scared in that
his
in those scenes.
His word is hurt.
Yeah,
and there is like the first gut punch for me.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
It's the first word that he says after being kind of evolved.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is this kind of gets triggered because in the present, Rocket Raccoon gets zapped by
Adam Warlock,
who's a pawn of the High Evolutionary in the present.
That was a good reveal, by the way. The what are they called? The Perfection or whatever they're... Whatever.
The gold skin people?
Yeah, the gold skin people that Elizabeth DeBakey...
They're called something. I don't know what it is.
But they are a creation of the High Evolutionary,
which makes sense.
Yep, that was a neat bit of
didn't
the...
Didn't you say you did it on, like, a bender or something?
Yeah,
like,
some
it was
something
like
yeah,
a
yeah.
kind of an offhanded...
Yeah, what's his name?
High Evolutionary said that he created those...
Oh, I thought you were saying that that James Gunn...
No, the High Evolutionary kind of... It was like he had done that on a lark or some for some dumb reason.
Yeah, he's a sort of godlike person, but who has all the ethics of an Elon Musk.
Yes.
But it does
open with a...
Right, so he injures Rocket, and he spends much of the movie in kind of a state of stasis. He's sick. It conveys that hospital-like thing because he's got, like, an oxygen mask on.
Yep.
And I kind of like the... relatively low stakes of the early half of the movie, which is to say they're just like, let's just save our friend.
Yeah.
That is their main goal early on in it. And throughout it, though, as he's kind of in this comatose state, he will have flashbacks.
Yep. That was an interesting choice, and I think it works, but there was a risk because Rocket is one of the best characters. You took him off the board.
Well, but in a weird other way, he is the main character of this movie.
No, he's the main character of half the movie.
But he's not part of the ensemble.
He's not doing the fun stuff with the Guardians.
Right.
So who all do we have in the Guardians? So there's Peter Quill, there's Mantis, who's a relatively new addition.
Mantis and Drax have become like a buddy thing.
Mantis and Drax.
Star-Lord and Nebula are both relating to the new Gamora, who died in Infinity War and came back in Endgame.
Right, and she had basically not gone through all of the character growth and development.
Right.
She had only just rebelled from Thanos in that timeline. And so it's like, yeah, she's not like a full villain anymore, but she still has a lot of those villainous instincts.
Well, and she doesn't, you know, she doesn't, that sister relationship she had with Nebula isn't really there, and the that's there more than the feelings she had for Peter, because she just has no use for this guy. She just thinks he's an idiot.
They, when she's talking about how there's more connection between, like, Peter and
Nebula,
he's clearly like, yeah. But that's like his sister now. I was, what are they doing playing up
not
possibility?
Not his sister.
Mantis is his sister. That's right. But, like, do you think that they will pursue that?
I don't think so, because I don't think we're going to see Nebula again.
It's interesting. I don't know quite why they brought it. It felt a little like the Chekhov's gun thing. It's like, you brought up that he does have some attraction to her and an emotional connection even, but...
I thought that scene was there to show us that Peter, while he's claiming that Gamora is his true love and everything, that really he's still kind of a kid in a lot of ways.
And ready to jump to the next new thing.
He's ready to jump to the next thing. And I think that was meant to indicate, like, he really needs to go home.
Jumping from lily pad to lily pad?
Yes,
instead
exactly.
Of swimming?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay,
they didn't hit it as hard as I would have liked to make that a thing.
That's fair. I think that's a good read on
that.
But
also the eyes gag is really funny.
It is funny. Yeah.
The what is it?
Your eyes are black.
You have a really good, but it's a really nice shade.
Really nice shade of black, yeah.
Yeah.
They were chosen to be by my father as a torture.
I thought all the arcs resolved really well in this.
There's also Kraglin and Cosmo. That rounds out the
Oh, yeah, Kraglin and Cosmo. That's a good...
Right. Man. So there was enough... Basically, it's still a big ensemble, mm-hmm. so that they... Even though they lose Rocket's particular snark, they've got someone... There's usually someone to be snarky.
Oh, yeah.
they're not without snark.
No.
All of them.
And this is a... Like, the story itself is really fun. The infiltration... I mean... Guardians did it best as heisty, and they definitely pulled another heist in this one.
100%.
I thought that the I do think they underused Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, but I mean he's not. I mean it's that was just kind of a throwaway thing.
We've got this. You know, I can always call this guy. Let's have him be a kind of a fun head of the security. I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you are kind of like watching some of the. You might be like me, Randy, watching and like wondering. It's like, oh, he's probably gonna. There's probably gonna be some big reveal or some big moment. And it's like, no, he was just playing like a supporting character, head of security.
Yeah,
give his friend a moment in the limelight. A bit.
Sure. What does that do for me?
Yeah, what does that do for me? Yeah.
I like Nathan Fillion, but that's maybe not quite enough to warrant him just playing a random role.
Yeah,
I liked him as kind of a security tool.
Yeah, I mean that's what he was. He was fine. Just fine.
It's like what's the it's kind of they were doing the same kind of thing in Dungeons and Dragons where they brought Bradley Cooper in.
Right.
But it didn't quite work. The Bradley Cooper thing worked.
It's also a very brief sequence.
This felt a little bit more like why did you bother with that?
Yeah. There's a lot of fun visual stylistics, including the weird kind of slightly gross organic world that they go to where everything looks like skin and stuff like that.
What a great design that was.
You know what's weird is, like, I think they actually managed to do it and have kind of gross moments, but it never quite felt gross out.
No, they didn't go Cronenberg.
I was worried that there would be some more poop jokes and stuff like that, and that it never came to pass. And instead it was just kind of, like, cool, weird visuals.
Yeah.
Weird, like, Steve Englehart or something like I felt like weirdness.
It's nice to see the original Guardians or the Ravagers again.
Yes. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
So you got Sylvester Stallone and...
he even had a Starhawk-looking costume in a way.
And got Martin X again.
Yep.
And,
I thought Gamora being with the Ravagers was a fun...
yeah.
The status quo stuff they did, really, really interesting. Them running nowhere, that was from the Christmas special.
Yep.
I really liked that. Kraglin struggling with the Finn.
Yep.
Cosmo sort of starting to figure Cosmo's running thing about being a bad dog.
Well, Kraglin says she was a bad dog because she could do something he couldn't.
We talked about Mike Nick that was kind of cool to see Beezer McTalkalock from the old 97s and Howard the Duck and the guy who's the buyer. And then the first movie are all there. They all live in...
But even Yondu makes an appearance.
Yes. He does. That was a great bit, too.
It was.
To use him was really, really good. There's a lot of emotion in this.
He brings a lot of emotional cachet to it. And James Gunn is very good at that. At times, I would say it risked being sort of maudlin.
It did.
And he's always butted up against that. But he usually, I think, lands on the right side of things and makes movies where I want to feel these emotions. I don't feel, you know,
manipulated.
I mean, they were manipulating,
yeah.
But I don't feel like kind of like lame about them or anything.
You didn't feel Frank Darabont manipulated,
right?
Sometimes, Frank Darabont does do that.
Also, I thought the action was great. That sequence, that's like basically their hallway fight at the end, where they take on like a whole bunch of guys.
It's one of the best Avengers level action sequences.
It was a really good use of their powers and their abilities, and just,
well, they were working together in the same way that the Avengers were at the end of the first movie.
Didn't they cut that so that it kind of feels like it's all one take?
Yes.
That was cool.
It was a really good sequence. Also,
it's a good example of how James Gunn understands some sort of basics of filmmaking or of action adventure filmmaking, which is like, okay, during the final fight, and this is something that, you know, Marvel movies can maybe stand to pay more attention to, when things tend to get very CG, find something cool to do in that final fight.
Right.
You know, make it stand out. Well, that's what they did in this case.
Yeah.
There's, you can find something different for all kinds of action adventure scenes, but like that needed something, and he found it.
Yeah.
I thought everybody got really good endings. I think we were all worried they were going to kill somebody off, and they faked it a couple times. I thought they might kill Rocket. I thought they might kill Star-Lord.
Yeah.
I think Adam Warlock was not great. But I also had to service like 20 characters, so, you know, not so much you can
do. I thought they were good for this version of Adam Warlock.
It was all right.
If somebody had never seen Adam Warlock in the comics and known that he was meant to be this kind of epic character, and just knows him from the movies and were like, oh yeah, he was a guy who was like a pawn of the High Evolutionary, real high power level, pawn of his, who ends up turning against him. It's cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good classic story arc.
I think for
those weird little Nazi haircut.
Year one Adam Warlock, like right out of the gate, just being born.
Sure,
this feels like
it works decently enough. Okay. Especially since he's a character who is about cocooning and evolving and cocooning and evolving.
We'll get to his staff wielding kind of.
Will we? We'll see if we will. I don't know if we will.
I bet we will. I mean, they leave it that's the new Guardians.
They do. I'm just not sure if that was just like his way of like the adventure continues kind of thing. You know, I don't know if there's any. I mean, obviously, Gunn doesn't intend to come back to it.
No, but Guardians will be in the MCU.
It said Star-Lord would return.
Well, yes.
It said Legendary Star-Lord will return, which is interesting.
That's true.
I thought having... The ending stuff was very satisfying. I think if you look back... I had watched Guardians 1 and 2 right before we saw this. Went and rewatched it. The through lines are pretty strong. Like, Nebula going from basically the secondary daughter to Thanos, who's concentrating to prove herself, to the head of nowhere is a good arc. Drax deciding that he doesn't want to just be a weapon anymore is a good arc. Mantis going off with her little babies.
Find herself.
Good arc. Like, there's a lot of stuff
And Rocket ascending.
Rocket becoming the new Star-Lord, essentially. Yeah. And Pete going home.
Yeah.
I was surprised how effective that was, because I like Star-Lord fine. I like Chris Pratt okay.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, like, invested in seeing his, like, emotional journey.
Yeah.
But it is his story. It's been his story from the outset.
Right.
So seeing him go home to Earth made a lot of sense as a finale.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Guardians, the one, has like, a really strong emotional opening with him losing his mother.
Yeah.
It's very tough, and it's, like, it kind of works on that Disney level. These are, like, very upfront... No, not trying to hide them emotional things that are extremely common.
Yeah.
And so giving him, having that be his final closure arc of getting him back home again.
Yeah.
Even if it's like, yes, they can't revive his mom. That's not something that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But giving him some family that's like his family from back when was really cool.
Also, this is a minor thing. It's not a minor thing. It's a pretty major thing, but Rocket singing along to all the music and loving the music in the way that Peter used to was a really neat touch. And the two of them being...
Although he was kind of early on, like, part of it was he was singing a little emptily. Like, he was like... Yeah. He was. It was like he could have enjoyed it, but he was kind of more, like, lost in it a little bit, maybe. Yeah.
But I thought he and Peter had been at odds for two movies. The second one especially, where the two of them are arguing about who's in charge.
Who's the captain?
And for them to be like, for Star-Lord to be like, that's my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And for
I'm going to spend the whole movie trying to save him.
Yeah, it was nice. It was a nice bit of character growth for both of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a lot of things happening here and a lot of emotional scenes near the end. It did sort of have the same thing as like Lord of the Rings, but also Marvel Endgame, but also Spider-Man 3 of like, there's a lot that's going to happen. And I guess, for the most part, I felt like they had earned it.
Yeah, actually, Lord of the Rings, the one you named, Lord of the Rings is the only one of those that I felt like, I was like, okay, another ending?
Wrong. You're extremely wrong.
No, Lord of the Rings has too many endings.
Never has it been more earned.
I also like that they showed Star-Lord as a planner.
What, do you not want to like, spend 20 minutes crying, Randy? Because I do.
I do, but only in Marvel movies.
I mean, I may have spent 20 minutes crying in this movie.
Oh, I definitely cried a lot at this movie, yeah. Yeah,
I was crying about Warlock's haircut.
What were you saying, Nick?
No, basically, I like that they showed Star-Lord as sort of the planner again.
Yeah.
His assault on the High Evolutionary's base was very... And the way of getting out of it was very clever.
Yeah.
And it doesn't all go to plan, but, you know.
Their Groot stuff was pretty great.
The Groot stuff was great.
Right that the collateral damage included the destruction of a whole planet.
An entire planet. Yes.
Yeah. But
that's not collateral damage. High Evolutionary did it on purpose.
Bit of a downer, if you think about it.
Well, that's the thing. They made
him... But also, I didn't know those people.
They made him one of the worst...
I felt sad for the little baby raccoon man.
It's a little like the...
But an entire world destroyed... It's the Alderaan.
It's the Dark Phoenix killing off...
The broccoli people. Sorry to say. It is inevitably, the characters you care about matter. Everybody else, collateral damage.
I mean, it is... It's horrific. Like, it's horrific.
They do make a point of it's pretty awful.
That it makes him a awful villain, but you're not like, oh, God, they lost. It doesn't... This is the thing that, like, Zack Snyder, those guys never get. It's like, you don't humanize the people to the point and then wipe them out so that we feel like, oh, well, it doesn't matter what they win or lose. They've already lost.
Right.
Like, I didn't feel like, oh, the Guardians already lost because the whole planet got destroyed.
It did kind of humanize the people, though. They had a whole...
They did.
They helped out the Guardians.
Yeah, they did.
Drax laid down on one of their couches.
Yeah, but at the same time... I wasn't like, oh no, not the
Counter-Earth
people,
right?
And that's a balancing act. That's like, White Gunn is a better filmmaker than Zack Snyder.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
As am I, and I've never made a movie once. anything else you want to say about this?
Let's see. It's good. Got a good soundtrack.
Oh, well, I did love the Fila Velga introduced at the end, which is cool.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say about this, and it's kind of like odd for any other Marvel movie, is that I don't know if I'll rewatch this.
Oh, I absolutely will rewatch this.
It's really hard. I mean, with all the animal stuff, it's harsh.
It'll be easier for me the second time because I know what's going to happen.
You know what's weird is, for me, will always, I think with movies, I'm always aware that it's film magic and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, to some degree, the only... there are, like... I can't blame anybody for whatever their particular triggers are. I've got some, and I've got certain, like, I always remember, like, when I saw the Buffy episode where her mom died.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, like, such an intense episode. I've actually never rewatched it.
Yeah.
Like, I think I could.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, it just, I kind of liked how emotional it was at the time, and it stood out as being so different, and so I've just never wanted to rewatch it. But I do, like, even though I would say I'm an animal lover, I know that's a CG animal. I know that this is a heart-wrenching story, but, like, that it is not real.
Except they did use, like, real animals, like, at times. Not all CG. I know that Cosmo is an actual dog.
But there was no animals harmed.
No. I mean, the American Humane Society was on set at all times.
Yeah, like...
I'm just saying, it's not one that I'm immediately going to rush back to.
Right.
I will watch the Guardians Christmas special and relive the good times.
Yeah, that's fair. I will definitely rewatch the whole Guardians trilogy.
Yeah.
I was very pleased with this.
Randy laughs at critter torture.
I won't put it on the level of like Avengers Endgame, which is a capper to 22 movies, basically. But it's among their best movies, I think.
It's the best Marvel movie that's come out in several years.
A while. I put this above Wakanda Forever.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. Well, we all agree that Guardians of the Galaxy is good, and you should see it, especially if you like watching animal torture. CGI animal torture. All right. That'll wrap it up for us this week. We will be back next week with more. And until that time, Joe. Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.